Willow Creek Springs presents Healthy Living with your host, Joe Grumbine.
We're taking an empty picture of the screen door there.
But you could get 40 years for growing two plants or one plant.
Yeah.
You know, I had a friend in Utah that had come into California and visited me. And after we had done our harvest, he asked me if he could have some of the plants that had been stripped. And there was nothing on these plants except limbs. Mm-hmm. They were bare limbs. And he wanted them. He wanted them because he thought they were, something to do with the history of pot.
Right.
So he took them back to Utah. And 6 months later, he had them in a bedroom in his home. There was an altercation with him and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
The police were called.
Yep.
He ended up doing 90 days in jail.
Yep.
For a piece of stick.
Sticks, yeah. There's not even anything active on it.
There was nothing active in it, on it, about it, close to it.
Just wood.
But he had wood, and they claimed that that was marijuana in Utah.
Yep.
And he did 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's not alone. In fact, he's far from alone. And that's the crazy thing. It's like, they're talking about all this new stuff. Oh, we are expunging all these records and all this and that and the other thing. But what they're not doing and what they can't do, they can't fix what's been done to so many people.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Can you ever get back the days that you spent in jail?
No, I can't get back the days I spent in jail. I can't get back the days I spent in court. You realize I spent over 200 days in court over 6 years.
Joe, I'm aware of all this. I know all of this. I watched.
Every day was a 60-mile drive through traffic early in the morning with the stress of, I can't be late or they're going to lock me up. Sometimes I was on time and they locked me up anyways. And all of those things, and then hoping you're going to get people to show up and help you, hoping the lawyers are going to show up, hoping you could figure out a way to pay the lawyers. I mean, it was, I developed a lump on my back that I had clandestinely removed in the middle of the night one night. I developed an itch on my face that subsequently moved around my body that was just pure stress. You can't get that back. I lost so many friends and family out of this that will never be replaced.
Well, I don't want to. I would never have mentioned that, but you did.
Yeah.
Because you lost a lot of family over there.
Oh, most of my family.
Your family walked away from you.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing. And
I made a new family, but
right. But you'll never get that back.
No.
What it cost you for nothing. I mean, over nothing. Such a trivial thing as a medicine. And why is it bad? Because it makes you feel good.
Right.
Here's a medicine that actually makes you feel good.
We can't control it and it makes you feel good.
Right.
We can't have that.
That's wrong.
Yes.
We don't get any money from this and it makes you feel good. Something's wrong with that if it makes you feel good and we can't get money from it.
Exactly.
So,
it's just gotta be wrong.
I'm ranting here.
No, it's good. It's a good rant and it's a good conversation. And that's the stuff that you can't get back. You can't get that fixed. And, the crazy thing is, like, people that even know about my story, and they're like, oh, yeah, you won, you beat the man. It's like, yeah, it didn't feel like winning. It felt good for a minute to not have that burden on you. It's like every once in a while, I think the Inquisitors let somebody go after they stretch them out on the rack and
cut them up and they
beat them to mostly death.
Well, you're mentally, and I use this really loosely, but you're mentally scarred.
Oh yeah.
For the rest of your life.
Oh, absolutely.
And but yet, here you are working Willow Creek Springs and giving back and giving to people that you want to help. And the people that you're helping right now have no idea of who Joe Grumbine is. They have no idea.
No, they don't need to.
Of what Willow Creek Springs is. They all that they need to realize is here is a guy that's wanting to give them an opportunity to accomplish something that will make their life better.
Well, that's one of the reasons we launched the Gardens of Hope, is because, you know, when you go through stuff like that, you realize, you know, most of the guys that were locked up where I was locked up were way worse off than I was, in the sense of they either didn't have family or loved ones, they were in there for violent or bad drug reasons, their lives were screwed up. And they didn't have even the kind of hope I had. And I know when I got out, when it was all said and done, you know, it was mostly, frankly, it was mostly because I wouldn't give up and because I was willing to try anything. But it was in maybe an equal part because of all the people that didn't give up on me and stood by me. So those two things together, if one of them wasn't there, I don't think it would have ended up.
Well, you have the tenacity that to do these things. I understand, you know, the tenacity of it. I understand where you get it from, where you go with it. I was there. I saw it happen. I saw these things occur. I've seen the devastation that is brought on by the legal system. The
justice system, they call it.
Well, we both, you know, we both use
not the... Not much the, justice in it, but...
We use the word in.
Yes.
We put the in injustice, you know. We put the in injustice. So, yeah. The injustice system here in the United States is notorious.
Mm-hmm.
And we both know that once you get in this system...
It's almost impossible.
They use the system to hold you down and to bring about their own agendas.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fight them, the more you fight them, the more they want to get you. That's why they hated you
exactly
so much. And that's why the judge in your own case,
right?
You know, he after the
he
case
played
was
dirty
over,
tricks, every dirty trick,
every dirty trick that he could. He even fed evidence or fed statements to the prosecution,
uh-huh,
to help them convict you.
Exactly.
That this is what you got to do this.
Right.
This is what you got to do that.
Here's your roadmap. Just do this and we'll get him.
And we'll get him. And then even after this man got you convicted in a trial.
We didn't slow down.
We did not slow down. We continued on. And we had the case overturned.
Yep.
And this time, he was noted for his dirty tricks.
Yeah.
It all came out in the end. And why did it come out? It came out because of the people with that little green ribbon on themselves.
That's
you
so
know?
True.
They're the ones that brought all this stuff out. And when we would wear those little ribbons into the courtrooms,
mm-hmm,
they would try to get us thrown out of the courtrooms.
Almost every
just
time.
Because of a green ribbon on our shirt.
Yep.
You know, not because we were mad, not because we were disruptive. But we had a ribbon on our shirt, so we couldn't be allowed.
It gave us an advantage, and they didn't want to see that.
Well, you know, when you're in court and you're looking back behind you, and in a courtroom you have a prosecution side,
mm-hmm,
and you have a defendant side, and when you turn around and you look back in your side, and there's nobody there, and you turn up over,
which is what most people do,
absolutely, and then when you look over at the prosecution side, and you see six or eight attorneys,
mm-hmm,
you know, all the police officers, everything else behind them that are trying to burn you, trying to hurt you.
Yep.
And you didn't necessarily do anything that was wrong.
No.
What you did was against the law.
Exactly.
It was not wrong. It was against the law.
And they didn't even claim there was a victim. Like, there was no, you know, no victim's impact statement. There was no victim's family. There was no victims even declared. And you know, there are people, myself included, that feel like a crime, in order to be a crime, needs to have a victim. Like, you got to have somebody that got hurt for there to be a bad thing, right?
I think that's called a victimless crime.
Well, yeah, exactly. And certainly, you know, things like infractions of code violations and all that, they don't lock you up for that. They give you a little slap on the hand. They give you lots of warnings, lots of ways to fix it, and then they'll give you a fine or put a lien on your property if they don't get paid. And And with these kind of cases, the first thing they want to do is lock you up. And they lock you up sometimes while you're even trying to fight your case. And you know, it's the dirtiest of all tricks.
The first thing they try to do is remove your forewithal to fight them.
Oh, yeah.
They try to take your financial freedom away from you first.
And they're good at that.
You know, they rip everything away from you that they can. And they try to leave you with nothing. And the state has unlimited resources to do what they have to do. But then when it comes down to the individual, you know, we both know the individual has quite limited resources. And even when we help people, even when you help people or I help people, we don't have unlimited money. We don't have unlimited resources to do this with. When they come up and try a case, they have unlimited sources for their lawyers. Their lawyers are going to get paid no matter what.
Well, that's the thing people don't realize. When you're in court and you're on one side and they're on the other side, the biggest difference is those on one side that are on your side, nobody's getting paid. In fact, they're all paying to be there, whether it's from their time, getting off work, or even just the cost of gas and whatever. The other side, the side that's trying to take you out, everybody's getting paid. Every single person is getting paid, from the bailiffs to the judge to the prosecutor, all their witnesses, all their experts. Everybody's just going to work, and you think about that and you go, wow, how can that be fair? And you know, we think about our rights.
That was that you just hit a nerve in my head.
Yeah.
You know, when we think about how can that be right?
Yeah.
You know, they're doing their job. I love that thought. That they're doing their job. Well, their job.
Isn't that what the Nazis said?
That's the thing. I'm just doing what I was told.
Yeah.
And to do that, to continue to have a job, they must make it more heinous than it really is. Exactly. You know, it might not. It might just be two Cub Scouts working together. Mm-hmm. But if they don't make it heinous and illegal and against the law, then they have no job.
Exactly.
And when they have no job, they have no paycheck. When they have no paycheck, things get a little sticky for the law enforcement. Now, we all know that there's going to be a need for law enforcement. We know that there's going to be a need for prosecuting attorneys.
Absolutely.
But
there are bad people doing bad things. But
absolutely.
What if we just spend our time dealing with those?
Absolutely. Let's deal with the people that are really criminals and not the people that we make out to be criminals. Because there's enough criminals out there doing dastardly deeds without us adding to that.
No, it's so true. And you know, when people look under the hood and they see what's actually happening, you realize that most things that happen are people preserving their own stake in life. And there's bad people that are just horrible and they do things just for fun because it feels good to them to do bad. But most people aren't that way. Most people, including most criminals, I think, have gotten themselves in a spot where they didn't see any other way and they did that thing, whatever it is, and it benefited them. Now, the other side of that coin, and it's a tricky situation. It's just like, you know, I'm a very libertarian-minded person that thinks government should keep the hell out of my business. However, I also realize why we have the agencies we have, because people are scumbags. And, you know, back in the 1800s, early 1900s, guys that made food figured out it was cheaper to throw non-food items in there and sell it to the peasants. And they made good money. Turns out some of that stuff was poisonous. So we had to have an FDA to make sure we weren't eating bad meat. And I get all that. But the other side of it is we take things to such extremes. And when you've got law enforcement that finds their way to going after, spending energy and resources on a particular kind of crime as opposed to another kind of crime.
Well, you and I both know.
That's where things get sticky.
You and I both know that prosecuting attorneys usually pick a thing. It's like the car of the day. When you're a highway patrolman, and you're doing your job out there day in and day out, and your job is to cite speeders.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes an awful boring job.
Sure.
And you try to break it up any way you can. You know, any way you can to make it less boring, to make your day go quicker or anything else. So today, as a CHP officer that's citing speeding cars, I'm going to do red cars.
Sure.
Tomorrow, I'm going to do green cars.
All right.
So today, I cite 14 people for speeding. I cite 14 red cars today.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's the same thing with a regular law enforcement. They become so bored with their job
mm-hmm.
that they need to put something there to change it up.
Right.
Now, they become specialized in what they do.
So nobody wants to deal with domestic abuse cases, which are probably most of them, and those kind of things are, you know, not only potentially dangerous, but unsolvable most of the time.
I remember when we were doing court support and doing a lot of things in the marijuana industry,
mm-hmm.
what we referred to ourselves as was low-hanging fruit.
Yep.
They don't want to mess with... Hey, Chris.
Uncle, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm sitting here with Joe Grumbine doing an interview right now.
Oh, okay. Good deal. I was going to see you wanted to meet for fish tacos, but it sounds like you're occupied.
I'm over at Joe's right now. Are you watching the ball game?
No. I am. We're just stationed now. We're going to head out. And I said, let's call Uncle and see if he wants to go to dinner.
I would have gone with you, but I'm here with Joe right now.
Hey Chris, what's happening? Doing good.
What's up?
Just talking about making the world a better place. You know how we are.
Of course.
Well, we're doing good. I got a couple of obnoxious dogs trying to cause some grief, but other than that, everything's good. Oh, you know, it's a never-ending story. We got two new ones, and they're slowly adjusting to the law. Well, one of them's adjusted pretty good. One of them still is kind of squirrely, but it's all good.
Good.
That sounds like a plan.
You guys need to come over here, and we'll all run over to the Golden Corral.
There you go.
I'm all over. Let's do it.
Right on. All right, take care.
So anyway, like I was saying,
and a low-hanging fruit.
Low-hanging fruit, and we know that marijuana people are less dangerous.
Sure.
Than methamphetamine people, or more less dangerous than heroin people, because most of the time you just want to smoke a joint and. Chill.
Just kick back, yeah.
And we both know that meth people are quite dangerous, you know, and different things like that.
Unpredictable, for sure.
Very, very unpredictable. So, it's...
Well, you know, the thing that, the other part of the puzzle that a lot of people don't realize, or maybe they do or don't, but the low-hanging fruit also refers to asset forfeiture. Because with drug cases, and they come and they arrest somebody for drugs, they can seize their property, their assets, they can take anything they want, and it doesn't matter if it's meth, fentanyl, heroin, speed, whatever, or pot, they don't care. But the difference is, most of the guys that are doing meth crimes are heavily armed, paranoid, and may or may not have anything. You know, if they're doing their own drugs, they probably don't have anything, or they had it, they took it all apart and forgot where they put it. If they're just selling it, they're probably viciously protecting themselves against the very people they sell it to from stealing it. So you hear about all the cartel stuff and all the, you know, the gangs and the shootouts and all that. That's almost never just pot related. It's almost always other things. So if you're a cop and you want to take somebody's stuff and you got somebody that's got a farm, a bunch of plants growing that you can't just pick up and hide into a truck and drive off with, it's a pretty easy target. And chances are they own some land, they own some property, they own some vehicles, they own whatever. Maybe they've got money in the bank and all of that good stuff. And you just get to walk in there and just take it. And like you said, most importantly, pot people typically are not violent. And I'm not saying that there isn't a violent pot person, but they're a lot harder to find than a lot of the other situations.
Well, one of the things that's made the violence in the pot industry is the law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
If pot was allowed to be grown like tomatoes, there would be no crime.
No problem.
There would be no crime in the pot industry.
A lot of people just be bored of it, you know?
Right.
It's not exciting, really.
You know, since the laws have began to change, and the more and more states that are legalizing it, and the only reason they're legalizing it is for the money.
Of course.
You know, follow the money.
Yep.
But the more they legalize it, the more they find out about it, the more they see the crime going down, the more they see less people actually wanting to use it. It's no longer
the rebellion drug. Anymore,
It's no longer the thing that we...
Alcohol's still that, but for whatever reason...
We're going to rebel and smoke a joint,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Grandma does now.
Now grandma's more than that. That was another thing about the firewood that we, you know, I'm just jumping helter-skelter
here. Yeah, it's all good, yeah.
One of the things that I came up with right now, and I'm dealing with my lady, my Miss Kathy,
mm-hmm.
and she loves a fire.
Right.
And there's very few things in life when you hit 73, 74 years old that you can really enjoy and set and bring a smile to your face.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that brings smile and joy to her is a fire in the fireplace. So having a fire for her, even if it's not for warmth,
doesn't
but for
matter.
The aesthetics.
Yeah.
If it brings
her joy, you know, let me just backtrack. So for people who are maybe hear this is a clip we will put out there, because Kathy Z is somebody that I don't talk a lot about, but I have in the past. And Kathy's somebody who... there's few people in my life that are more special to me than Kathy. And at a time when I needed help the most, and my own family couldn't be bothered, my own mother couldn't be bothered. In fact, I don't have a relationship with my mother today because of that whole incident. I just can't deal with it. But this lady who I didn't even know, barely knew, stopped what she was doing and says, "Hey, I want to help." And when I was in a hopeless spot, like I couldn't get out of it, I was in a spot where I was locked up, and I had a guy trying to help me, and they weren't letting him help me, and I was like, I'm never gonna get out of here, there was no way. And all of a sudden I show up at this hearing this one time, and this lady sitting up in the up on the stand, and the judge is asking her a bunch of questions about the money, and all of a sudden I'm like, holy cow. And this lady literally took her retirement and got me out so that I could fight. And subsequently, she came and lived with me for, I don't know, about 5 years or so. And that gift she gave me was so powerful. It was like, you ever hear the old fable about the lion that had a thorn in his paw? And he was so hurting. He couldn't walk. He couldn't hunt. He was miserable. And so a mouse comes along, says, "Hey, I can help you." And he goes and he reaches down in there, pulls that sucker out. All of a sudden, the lion is free and he's just so happy and he's got a friend for life. And that was how I felt, because I was in the lion's seat at that moment fighting this battle, the tip of the spear. I was all bloodied and I didn't have any way to get help. And she come up and she helped me.
Well, that's what she does.
But since that time, you know, I've been struggling with, you know, getting myself back on my feet, doing business and all that. And then she found a partner, and you guys have been happy and you know, together for a good long while, and I've been comforted knowing that she's okay. But now that she's going through some troubles, I struggle, because I You guys are just far enough away that I can't get off work and zip over there and just hang out very often. And I haven't for that reason, but I want to